Okay, so let's get going. Welcome back, everybody. It's been a couple of weeks already, so welcome back. We'll try to get back into the swing of things here. Still discussing Hilchos Bishul and specifically trying to reheat foods on Shabbos. Many, many thanks to the sponsors for this evening's shiur, to Aran and Alicia Bar-Or. Thank you so much for sponsoring this evening's shiur, Le'ili Nishmas Aran's father, Hananya Ben Segula. Many, many thanks, and may all of our learning be Le'ili Nishmaso, and may his neshama have an aliyah. So we left off last time. I don't think we quite got to the subject of hot plates exactly. We were talking about reheating foods on Shabbos and different ways of being able to do so, and started dancing around the issue of hot plates a little bit. But let's get right into that tonight, because I know that that is probably, for the most part, anybody want to be brave? Any blech users out there? Anyone still using a blech on Shabbos? No? Anyone want to admit, own up to it? It's okay.
Occasionally.
Still using a black for Shabbos?
Every week.
All right. Good for you. Good. There's something.
Not anymore.
Not anymore because of these shiurim? Is that the intimation?
Yeah. And I'm like really surprised because I feel like if a blech is really not okay to use on Shabbos, I feel like I've had so many people in my home. Like, why did anyone tell me anything?
Listen, I think people are polite. They try not, you know, peeking into the kitchen necessarily. And it's not that it's really not okay. It's just that there are ways of doing it. Largely it is not. Well, I'll put it this way. First of all, we're going to see in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Makes it clear that at least according to some, according to many, and according to him, using what we call a Shabbos blech or a Shabbos plata, really, or a Shabbos hot plate is by no means a panacea, according to all postgame. So he's going to put a hot plate effectively in the same camp as a blech. And it's not that a blech is completely unuseful. It's just that it takes a little concocting, finessing. You need to know what to do and figure out how to cook the sorts of foods that will make it more acceptable. That would be basically keeping it up on the blech from before Shabbos and letting it go the whole way through. So along the lines of having things like that really cook overnight. So that's when it would be acceptable. Or we didn't really speak of the notion of a hefsek kedera. That would be another scenario where, let's say, you have something that is on the blech and was stationed on the blech all Shabbos long, to then heat things on top of that pot. We'll deal with that in a little bit yet. But meanwhile, the notion of a hot plate, we'll at least discuss, you know, outside, so to speak, we'll discuss a little bit, is very, very worthwhile and something really worth knowing about, at least according to other poskim. So we'll see it inside of the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, and then we'll talk about the opinion of some others. Okay, feel free. As always, at any time, to take yourself to let me know if you have questions. Feel free to chime in. Okay. Meanwhile, so let's get cracking. So let's talk about hot plates.
Rabbi.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah, go ahead.
Rabbi, when you talk about a blech as being like trickier or more problematic, are you referring to putting things on the blech on Shabbos?
Shabbos.
Oh, okay. Okay. You're not referring to things that you know, a situation where you just have like your Friday night food on the blech from before Shabbos.
That's another
scenario. You're just leaving it there and then removing it.
Sure. So that's another scenario where it would be really, really worthwhile and may well be much more convenient than using a hot plate, because generally speaking, a full gas range, electric range, whatever, is a lot larger than a hot plate. And is oftentimes more convenient. It's usually the case that a stove takes up prime real estate inside of a kitchen. I don't know about, I mean, anybody's been to our home. Our hot plate hangs out on top of our washing machine. Why? Because if you're going to have something that's hot and that's on, you don't want to leave it on a countertop. You don't want to put it on top of the stove. So this way it's sort of like out of the way, tucked away, but it's not exactly as convenient. So for sure, if you're going to want to have a surface to just keep food on over Shabbos. And also the other advantage, and this is a whole other conversation, but assuming you're using a timer on an electric hot plate, that might also be an advantage, let's say, over using a gas burner that you then can't turn off afterwards. But absolutely correct, 100%. There's a lot of value in still using a Blech for Friday night or things that you're cooking all Shabbos long.
So let's it also comes up, like if you're, you know, like we have Shabbos that then goes into Yontif, like the way Pesach falls out. So if you're leaving your burner on anyway because you want to cook on Yontif,
right,
then it just seems more convenient to use that to keep your food hot for Shabbos.
For anyway. Friday night, what we'll get into is that Shabbos day, it doesn't prove that helpful unless you're cooking the kinds of things that can really stay on the blech all Shabbos long, right? From before Shabbos and then through Friday night and into Shabbos. So just as a quick reminder, because it has been a couple of weeks, right? What we've really been addressing most recently is the question of hachzara, of returning things to a fire on Shabbos. Largely what we've been speaking about, and think about even just the word hachzara, returning, suggests that we are dealing with something that was removed from the fire on Shabbos, and then the interest is to replace it on the fire on Shabbos. And we needed a number of conditions that need to be met in order to be able to do so. One of which is that the fire be covered so that I can't put something onto an uncovered fire on Shabbos, even if it was there previously. If I'm going to remove it, it needs to be returned back to a covered flame or a covered fire. We need to have kavana that we're going to put it back, that we're intending to put it back. Needs to be that you're still holding onto it. These are all at least ideal. The fact that it's covered is an absolute, but ideally you should still be holding onto it with one hand, holding onto it with both hands, whatever it is, but not completely put down and then abandoned. And then you decide afterwards that you're going to put it back, or you're, oh, I can't believe I let go of it. My intention the whole time even was to put it back, but it should still be in hand. And also that certainly it needs to be mevushal kol tzarcho. It needs to be completely cooked and needs to still be hot, or at least warm when you return it back to the fire. So what happens when you have an interest, let's say, in not just returning something that was already there, but as comes up far more frequently, especially with the kinds of things that all of our, that become, you know, trendier and more intriguing, let's say, for a Shabbos afternoon than just chalent and kugel, and we want to be able to serve ourselves or serve to others. So how do we go about heating those things on Shabbos? I can't leave it on the blech all Shabbos long, or I can't leave it on the plato all Shabbos long. Is there any means of actually being able to heat it up on Shabbos itself? Not so much hachzara, not so much returning it to the fire, but what about putting it on something l'chatchila, from the very outset? From the very outset, would that be okay? Would that not be okay? So let's see what the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa has to say about kirayim uplata chashmaliyim, about electric appliances, whether an electric stove or an electric hot plate. So he notes initially, kol kira chashmalis nechsheves le'ish megula. First of all, we need to know that just because it's electric and just because we don't see any open flame, any traditional flame, nevertheless, it's considered to be eish megula. It's considered to be an open flame. Even if the surface that's ordinarily used to heat things upon is present. Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa says, therefore, that is considered to be an open flame. So it's true that, let's say, when you have an electric range, you don't see anything necessarily that resembles a flame, but you do see the coil that actually gets hot. So let's even go a step beyond that. Let's say I don't even see the coil that's actually getting hot. Let's say I'm talking about a crock pot. And the surface, the heating surface inside of the crock pot becomes just that, becomes the heating surface. What Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa is saying is that needs to be covered. That's considered to be open. That's like an open flame. Even though there's nothing that resembles fire at all, there are heating mechanisms and heating coils, electric heating coils inside of the crock pot, inside of that fixed bottom that you'll never see. Nevertheless, that's not considered to be a concealed flame or a closed flame. You need something that lines the inside of that in order to say that I'm returning it to a covered flame. And if it's not covered, I can't put it back in there on Shabbos. You might have no need to put it back in there on Shabbos, but if you did, it is important that it be covered, that you have some kind of line or a lining of aluminum foil or something like that inside of a crock pot. This would also then be saying that whatever it is that you're using to rewarm food, again, when you put it back, it has to be covered. So let's say an electric stove also needs a blech, just as much as a gas stove does. Or if we're talking about an electric hot plate, similarly that the surface, the heating surface of the electric hot plate also likewise, similarly, would have to be covered over with, let's say, something like aluminum foil. Even if the actual electric coil, electric wires, electric coils are hidden beneath the surface, you don't see the actual heating element. Nevertheless, it's still considered to be open because what's usually typically used as the heating surface is the cooking surface or heating surface. If that's exposed, that then needs to be covered. Therefore, you cannot return any container that contains food or any pot containing food. Unless the stovetop is covered. And again comes the suggestion, the asbest with asbestos. Don't try this at home, kids. Don't use asbestos to cover over your stove anymore, but whatever you are using, a sheet of scrap metal, basically whatever blech is, or aluminum foil over the cooking surface, something to cover it over. That is the point at which we consider it to be covered over, okay? So remember that both very, very practically, for whatever it is that you might want to return your food to. But also, as we move into reheating hot plates, a Shabbos plata, Shabbos warmer, whatever, we'll have to keep this in mind as well. So, chaf hey. Ulam, however, let's take it. We got a question here in the chat. Not safe to use aluminum foil over stove. Yeah, I wouldn't use it on a stove. But inside a crock pot, you can certainly use aluminum foil. Inside of a crock pot, you can use aluminum foil. Fact of the matter is, certainly not directly on the heating surface. I mean, my stovetop is like surrounded with aluminum foil come Pesach, but yeah, I wouldn't do anything like that directly over the actual flame. But that's when you would have something like a blech. You can certainly put aluminum foil on top of a warming tray or a platter, that kind of thing. But we'll talk about a platter right now. Ulam plata chashmalis miyuchedes l'shabbos. Now let's talk about a specifically set aside, manufactured for this purpose, a warming tray, a plata, something that is specifically made and manufactured for the purpose of Shabbos, even miyuchedes l'shabbos. Was it a chalent plata? What about a chalent plata? Something that is used to warm food. Hamu edas lishmor al chom hamaachal, that is designed in order to preserve the heat of the food. Sha'aleha, that's upon it. Vein regilim, he says, vein regilim levashel aleha, and we don't usually cook on such things. Vegam e efsher, and it also is impossible lahagdil es midas hachom shela. This is a very important point. It's also impossible to turn up the heat. It's non-adjustable. It has one setting. You plug it in and it turns on. And if you unplug it, it turns off. Or if you have a timer, then it turns on, it turns off. But one setting, it cannot be adjusted. Then, eina tu'una kisui nosaf. That doesn't require an additional covering. U'motra lahachzir aleha es hakli. So then you could put the kli directly back on the plata. Bear in mind, though, and I really need to underscore this in the estimation, the opinion of the Shmir Shabbos Gilchus of Rav Neuvert, he's talking about returning food to the plata that had already been there previously. What he's talking about is if you have a chalen that was put on the hot plate, let's say from before Shabbos, and it continues to sit there all throughout Shabbos, and now you're taking it off the plata, and you want to scoop some of it out into a serving dish, but then you want to return the remaining chalen back to the plata. Is it problematic that the warming tray, let's say, is not covered? Does there need to be something on top of it? He says no. He says it's not necessary. You don't need to do that. There's no requirement to have this covered. It's already considered covered, or it's good enough without the cover on it. You can simply return the kli directly to the warming tray as long as it was on it previously. As long as you fulfill all the other conditions and in Skrim La'el Sif Yirchas that we mentioned earlier. So you need to have Kavana to return it. It needs to be obviously Mavushal Kol Tzarcha, or it needs to be completely cooked. If it's not completely cooked, forget about all the optics. Forget about all the Durabanans. It's actually cooking on Shabbos. If it's not completely cooked and then you put it onto a hot plate, and putting it on the hot plate will continue cooking it, that is an act of actual Bishul on Shabbos. You are in far more dangerous waters and territory than simply the optics of Nechseh Kumabashal. It looks like it. It's a derabanan. It gives the impression of that would actually be an act of cooking. So it needs to be completely cooked. You need to continue holding it in your hand. You need to have kavana that you're planning on returning it. And as far as the condition of it being covered, so that's not necessary. It doesn't need to be covered. Aval einli tein aleha, he's very clear though. Aval einli tein aleha lechatchila b'shabes kedera sheyesh batavshil. But you can't lechatchila, you can't for the very first time, you can't from the outset put something on this Shabbos plata, on Shabbos itself. Afilu hu bishul kol tzarcho. Not talking about an issue of actual bishul, even if it's completely cooked, so you cannot possibly cook it again. We've already spoken about this a lot, that ein bishul achar bishul, when it comes to dry, solid food, once it's cooked, there's no double jeopardy. There's no act of recooking an item that's already cooked. We'd be speaking purely about optics, about mechsei kumavashal, about what it looks like, about what it's similar to. That's the problem. Afilim kavanaso, rak lahavik tinaso. And furthermore, even if your kavan is nothing other than to just take the chill out, I don't even want to warm it up. I don't even want to get it to Yad Soledis. So it's a solid food. It's already been cooked. I don't even want to get it up to Yad Soledis. I just want to take the chill out. Is it mutter for me to put it back on the plata? Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, answer is no. You cannot from the outset put anything on a Shabbos plata on Shabbos. What's the advantage? The lone advantage of a Shabbos plata, single setting device that is designed purely to warm food up and not really to cook on. What is the sole advantage? Sole advantage, according to the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, is that it doesn't also have to be covered. You don't need an additional layer of aluminum foil, as opposed to returning something to a blech, where you have to have a blech, returning something to a stove, meaning where you have to have a blech. So that would be the advantage. There are those who argue. There are those who argue, maybe first amongst them, I'm not sure, but maybe first amongst them, Rav Eider in his Sefer, which was heavily, heavily influenced by Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Piskei Halach of Rav Moshe Feinstein. He actually has a tshuva in the back of the, we've spoken about this before, that in Rabbi Eider's English Sfarim, he has a number of novel questions that he had asked Rav Moshe. Some of them were later on incorporated into Igros Moshe, and they're there in the back of the Sefer. He was asking him about about using something like a hot plate. Actually, not so clear from the way that Rav Moshe responded, at least to me, that he necessarily gave carte blanche and assumed that it was mutter necessarily. But Rabbi Eider certainly does in the Sefer itself. He says that you may put something on a hot plate, even lechatchilas. This is a very, very important machlokas. Very important. I can't think of anything that becomes more practical in terms of the way that we might want to go about making Shabbos and rewarming food and having Shabbos food in the manner that we're accustomed to, in the manner that's most convenient, than this issue. So to be clear again, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says nothing doing. Blech or bust, basically. You want to use a hot plate like a blech, fine. You want to not have to put yet another cover of aluminum foil on an appliance. That's a good way to go. But you certainly can't take chicken out of the refrigerator and put it onto a hot plate on Shabbos. That is usher, says Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. Rabbi Eider says it's okay. So why is it okay? What is the actual issue? What's the issue at hand? We've spoken about this before. What is the concern when we have food that's already cooked and you have an interest in rewarming it and you want to put it onto the fire, you want to put it onto the stovetop? What's the actual issue at hand? The issue at hand is, spoke about it even a few times just this evening already, mentioned it already a few times just this evening, issue is mechzei kimavashel. It's not cooking. It's definitely not cooking. Can't be cooking because the chicken's already cooked. And the difference between cold chicken to warm chicken, that's not an act of cooking on Shabbos. There are ways that you can do that. That's mutter. So that's not the actual Isra at hand. That's not an Isra Da'arais. That's not an Isra Da'arabanan. And there's nothing wrong with warming chicken. The problem is where and how you warm it. The issue becomes if you take chicken and you put it onto or into a cooking appliance on Shabbos, it looks like you're cooking. it's not exactly a Maris Ayan issue. It's more formalized than that. It becomes its own actual Isser Derabanan. Mechze Kemevashel in of itself is problematic. Hachzara, returning food to a fire, therefore needs to be governed by all these rules and regulations, all these parameters. It has to be very clear that you're simply continuing a process that was already started. It has to be very clear that this is something that was already on the stove. I only took it off for a little bit. I'm still holding it, for crying out loud. I had kavana the entire time that I was going to be putting it back. It's not like something that from the very outset I'm putting onto the stove. And again, this is all even though it's completely cooked. The stove itself has to be covered over, so you're at least achieving some degree of heker, of differentiation between the way that I ordinarily cook and the way that I'm rewarming food now. That notwithstanding, right, all those issues having been said, Rabbi Eider argues that still, it's one thing if you tell me that when I put something back on a stovetop, it's mechzei kemevashel, it looks like I'm cooking, and therefore I cannot put it back on Shabbos if it hasn't already been there. But to say that that's true of an appliance that is built and designed to warm, and that's not to say that you can't cook on a warming tray or on a hot plate on a Shabbos pot. That's not to say that cooking is impossible. I've never seen a plata where upon which cooking is impossible. It takes very, very little to fry an egg. You can always fry an egg on top of certainly the ones that they sell today that are well-made and they get really hot. Sometimes you have to make a point, not even for any halachic consideration, but just find a way to create some kind of barrier between the surface of the hot plate and the bottom of the pots, just so that it's not direct contact, because it gets too hot and we're dealing with food that's already cooked. So the issue again is one of mechzei kemevashel. Rabbi Eider says, it's not mechzei kemevashel. It doesn't look like you're cooking, because who cooks like this? This is no way to cook. You're going to take a bunch of 9x13s and you're going to cram it onto this surface that gives you absolutely no ability to adjust the heat, to turn it up, to turn it down. And it's made l'chatchila specifically, specially designed just for the purpose of rewarming. Then that should really be completely mutter to put something onto, even l'chatchila, on Shabbos. Now, the other, I'm not saying that Shmir Shabbos Kilchus is saying this, but once you say that it can be, that you can put food directly on Shabbos, then the other question becomes, well, do you need anything that then covers the surface? So to some degree, this in of itself would be something of an intellectually dishonest confluence of different ideas and different shitos from two different opinions. Shmir Shabbos Kilchus says it doesn't need to be covered, but he also says you're not allowed to put anything on Shabbos. Okay, but if we hold like Rabbi Eider and his colleagues that it's mutter to put something onto the hot plate on Shabbos, so then does it also need to be covered? Or can we assume like Shmir Shabbos Kilchus said that basically a hot plate, it's something that's used as a warming device. It's not really used as a cooking device. Many say that if you're going to put something on a hot plate, even l'chatchila on Shabbos, you don't need anything that covers the surface, because there's nothing really to cover. There's nothing really to adjust. There's no means that you have of adjusting it. That's really the reason why it's covered in the first place. It's as a reminder that, oh, right, I'm not permitted to adjust it. I can't tinker with it. I can't do anything to it. And it creates just an additional barrier that, look, I'm not really cooking. But if the appliance in its very inception is something that we don't believe looks like a cooking appliance to begin with, so then the idea of also covering it with something else, many assume, is really not necessary. Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, don't put anything on a plata on Shabbos, at least not from the fridge. Rabbi Eider, put something on the plata on Shabbos. As long as it's completely cooked, there'd be nothing wrong with doing so. I think more and more people do indeed hold this way, and it creates a major convenience on Shabbos. So what about hot plates or warming plates that have adjustable knobs? Then you're back in the territory of a stove that effectively becomes like a stove, at least potentially. There may be something to be said, and the truth is I'm not so clear on this point, if this is the question. I believe I have a recollection of hearing this from Rev Willig, but I would like to double check before saying so. My recollection is as follows. So Maria, you're asking about, what about a hot plate that can be adjusted? Another question is, let's say something like a warming drawer. Are warming drawers still in vogue? For a while, they were going into all new kitchens, and it was really exciting. I don't know. Anybody here have a warming drawer? I'm going to take that as a resounding no. If you ever meet anybody who has a warming drawer, what a warming drawer is as follows. It is a drawer that's actually an appliance. Don't leave like your Ziploc bags in there. They'll melt into one big mass of plastic. It's a drawer. You open it up. It's completely lined with metal. It kind of looks like the sort of thing that you'd find like in the galley of an airplane that they would use to rewarm things. And it has an adjustable setting on it. And you use it to rewarm things. Nobody cooks anything in there. I have a recollection of once being on a call where Rabbi Willig addressed this and felt that as long as the knob could be covered, that it would be acceptable. So let's just review the ideology of this again, that if the reason why I can't put food, let's say, onto a stovetop on Shabbos is because it looks like cooking. I'm putting it onto a cooking appliance, even if it's covered, even if there's a blech on top of it, it is fundamentally a cooking appliance. People cook on a stovetop. So even if there's a sheet of metal on top, it's still a cooking appliance. We become more sensitive to that on Shabbos. But if you're talking about an appliance that's not a cooking appliance, it's a warming appliance, you have much more latitude. Don't tell me that this is mechzei kemevashel. That really is the svara. That's really the notion that Rabbi Eider puts forward. You can't say that this is mechzei kemevashel if this is an appliance that fundamentally people do not use, across the board people don't use to actually cook on. Therefore, something like a warming drawer, it's true that it has an adjustable setting, but if you could find a way of maybe covering it or lining it or putting, I don't even know that necessarily you would need to line it, but have a way of covering over the knob so the knob doesn't become an issue. The concern about you might come to adjust it, so that's no longer present because it's been covered over. I'm not going to adjust the flame. And fundamentally, this is a warming appliance, not a cooking appliance. That's my recollection. I would like to double check. So nobody seems to have a warming drawer. So I don't know. Don't put your stuff into your warming drawer this Shabbos. But if that is the case, then that presumably should apply to a warming plate or a hot plate has an adjustable knob. If the knob could be covered, then presumably you'd be in the same territory. If it's not something that's really used for cooking, but only for warming, there shouldn't really be any problem with putting it on that on Shabbos. It's certainly ideal to have one that just doesn't have the knob or the adjustable setting in the first place. That's how they are sold. That's the one. That's how all of the ones that are made for Shabbos are made, without an adjustable knob. But I'll try to have a little bit more of a firm answer for everybody next week. Yeah, Natalie, had a question?
Yeah, so the warming drawer, do we know like approximately what temperature it is?
Like how high?
Yeah, like how hot it gets, the warming drawer.
I'm not certain. I mean, you could probably, but I would think something like, 250, something like that.
Uh-huh. Okay, and then the fact that, because it's, people could cook at that temperature. You know, like when you slow cook certain foods, or it's still considered okay, even if like technically could be used for cooking.
So again, like the hot plate that I have, I am certain you can absolutely cook an egg on that thing. I mean, no question. Or a pancake.
Right.
You know, use it as a griddle, basically. You absolutely could. Again, the concern is that it looks like you're cooking. So now, if nobody in their right mind would use this for cooking, because if I was going to cook, I would use my stove. If I was going to cook, I'd put a frying pan or a griddle on top of the stove. Nobody would use a warming appliance. Nobody would use a hot plate. Nobody would use a warming drawer. Then it becomes very difficult to claim that this appears to be an act of cooking if you are warming the food in a manner that people would never dream of doing if they were actually interested in cooking food from the outset, despite the fact that conceptually, yeah, it could be. Again, the example that I gave, or a couple examples. So one comes up, more classically in older halachic sources, which is a radiator. You can cook on a radiator, but it doesn't look like cooking because nobody cooks that way.
But the warming drawer does look very similar to those ovens that have like the larger main oven and then has like the smaller oven.
Right. Much the same way that a hot plate looks like a griddle. right? If you go to, you know, if you get like one of those freestanding, Tova's on the line, right? Tova, remember the griddle when we did that? I forget what that was for. I just remember Aaron standing in the kitchen of the old shul flipping pancakes on. I don't remember what that was for. That was like the flipped, it was a kid's
thing. Yeah, that was for the
Jama party.
Napohu breakfast. Yes, right, for dinner.
Yeah. You guys got that griddle. I mean, it looks very much like a hot plate. It's a freestanding electric griddle, gets plugged into the wall, and it's just one big, you know, Teflon cooking surface. I mean, it doesn't look that dissimilar to a hot plate. So, and it, which I think the shul still has, so we can do a show and tell next week. So even though it looks like that, but it's not, that's not what it is. And nobody actually uses that. So I'm not sure it's a question of, you know, how closely does this resemble an act of, an act of cooking, or how much does this appliance resemble an appliance that people do use for cooking? The fact is, this appliance people don't use for cooking. So when we talk about mechse, again, that's something to keep in mind. When we speak about mechse kemevashel and that it looks like cooking, we're not just talking about like putting on a show for other people. It's also just our own comfort and slippery slope of, if you use this, then you'll start using something else. But if we have equipment that's dedicated to warming, that's not cooking, so then there's something of a, you know, of a built-in reminder, or built-in hecker, that this is to warm and this is not to cook, and that would be the reasoning behind those poskim who would say that it's okay. You're correct that there are those who feel otherwise, that this nevertheless, right? Clearly, when Rav Neuwirth speaks about this, he's talking about him. You add this lishmor al chum ha-ma'achal, and that's what it's designed to do. It's designed just to preserve the heat, just to warm. Right, but people really don't cook on it. So he says that becomes advantageous to a degree. You don't have to then cover it over, but you can't put anything onto it on Shabbos. You can't take anything out of the fridge and put it on Shabbos. So you would not be wrong if you wanted to be machmir. That would be Shmir Shabbos Kilchaza. But you also wouldn't be wrong if you wanted to be mekel. That would be Rav Eider and his understanding, seemingly anyway, his understanding of what Rav Moshe said. That I know Rav Willig does hold is a mutter, that you can use a hot plate. He also holds that you can use a timer. I actually remember that conversation. It was right after, it was a conference call, and it was right after that horrible, horrible story in, I think it was in Brooklyn. It was the hot plate that malfunctioned and there was a fire, catastrophic fire. And, it just made everybody sort of question the appliances that they were using and making sure that they were really safe. And Rabbi Willig at the time was really championing the cause to use timers. Meaning if you use timers, you should certainly have your hot plate on the timer. Why not? If you're very, very careful and you're makpid and you don't use timers on anything, let's say, other than lights, which is what Rav Moshe Feinstein says to do, so then refrain from using a timer. But basically, if you use timers, and for the most part, I think people do use timers, so then it's very, very worthwhile to have a hot plate on a timer, so that it just shrinks the amount of time that you have any kind of appliance running, and you have any hot surface at the very least that's on and around, in and around kitchen and kids and that sort of thing, then you may as well.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
What would be the reason to not to use a timer? Can you speak to what the drawback of using a timer on something like a hot plate would be?
Meaning the halachic drawback?
Yeah, like what would be the problem with it?
So Rav Moshe holds that timers may not be used effectively as an outgrowth of Amira La'akum, which on the one hand sounds a little amusing, or like, what? Why? I mean, that's so, what an odd kind of jump to make. And yet it proves rather, let me put it this way. Rav Moshe's concern was that this is effectively like Amira La'akum, and that inasmuch as Chazal instituted prohibitions against hiring a butler and having him follow me around all Shabbos long and saying, by the way, you know, turn the light on, turn the light off, put up the food, turn the food on, turn the food off, open the car door, start the ignition, take me for a ride, take me here, take me to the office, fill out this paperwork. and all that. And then basically you end up with something that's just either that in of itself, it's not Shabbos anymore, or that that tends to degrade the prohibition of malacha to such a degree that we'll will invariably end up doing it ourselves, whatever exactly you say the concern or the consideration is. That's Amir al-Akam. Rav Meshach says, what's the difference between an actual human being and a box? It's the same thing. If you plug a hot plate into a wall and you have this small little contraption that I've basically told ahead of time, I've told before Shabbos, hey, box, turn on this appliance at 11 o'clock in the morning. What's the difference between that and having my non-Jewish neighbor come over and do it for me? It's the same thing. So Moshe says it's Amir al-Akam. And he says more than that, he creates this picture. He says, you know what we're going to be able to do? And it was so prescient that, you know what we're going to be able to do? We're going to be able to run entire factories off the push of a button. And we're good. And if we say that this is mutter, then it completely undoes the whole advantage that we gain when it comes to the prohibition of Amir al-Akam. At the push of a button, at the set of a bunch of timers, entire factories can run. He says, and then it's not Shabbos anymore. It's not Shabbos. So on the one hand, that was remarkably prescient in terms of what was coming down the pike, because absolutely, I mean, how much can be automated now? He wasn't even talking about, you know, it sounded like something out of the Jetsons, maybe, when Rav Moshe spoke about all the kids out there. I can tell you what the Jetsons is. But it sounded like something absolutely crazy, absolutely loopy. We're right there. That's where we are. We're talking about autonomous cars, like today, now, that are being tested by Google right now in California as we speak. So it's absolutely a reality. And on the one hand, you could say, and what's that going to do to Shabbos? On the other hand, Baruch Hashem, it seems that even with the advent of timers, I don't know, maybe Rav Moshe would argue, maybe Rav Moshe would look around today and he'd say, see, I told you. Like I would say, see Rosh Hashiva, we made it, we are using timers and it's still Shabbos. And maybe he would look around and say, no, it's not. this isn't Shabbos. I don't know what you did. This just isn't Shabbos anymore. You know, when I was a kid and the way that I envisioned it and what it's supposed to be. So that's basically the drawback. That's the issue. Rav Moshe effectively says, I don't know. I don't really recall from his actual language if he went so far as to say, that's my recollection, that he held that it's Amir la'akum mamish. Not just that it's akin to, but that this is a fulfillment of that exact same prohibition. The one license that Rav Moshe did give, and this I'm a little unclear about actually, was I believe he said the one license that he gave was for lights, because we've always had the minhag of, let's say, performing Amir la'akam when it came to having a, like, a quote unquote Shabbos guy, right, to come into the shul and turn on the lights. So it can't be that this is more usher than Amir la'akam. So for lights, he said it should still be mutter. Now, his example is one that relates particularly to shuls, which would be an additional reason for kula and for heter when it comes to Amir la'akam. Does that then apply? It seemed to me, my recollection anyways, that he then applied that even to lights at home. I'm not, if that is the case, then I'm not sure exactly how you make that jump, how you go from the fact that we ask a non-Jew to come to shul to do certain things. That's also because it's Tzarchei Tzibur and Tzarchei Mitzvah and things like that. So at any rate, that though would be the drawback. Rav Moshe also seemed to say that the timer itself, he was talking about adjusting timers, also that the timer itself was also muktzah, because it's klishim lachta l'isser. Rav Shlomo Zalman held that timers are mutter, and once you say that they're mutter, once you say that you're allowed to use a timer, so then it's also not klishim lachta l'isser. It's not muktzah, because if it's mutter to, you can't actually plug it in l'chatchila, but like moving the pins around in some circumstances might be okay, and we wouldn't automatically consider those pins to be muktzah, because if it's mutter to be done, then it can't be muktzah. So that would be the drawback. It comes from Rav Moshe. So that's the issue with lights. Did he say that they? That was the question. Is it true for lights? My recollection is not, but the reasoning for it, I'm not so clear about, because I believe it stems from the sense that even Amir la'akum is mutter for lights, like when we have a non-Jew come into the shul and turn on the lights. But that's specific to a shul. Does that then apply to a house or not? That's an open question. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach did hold that timers were acceptable. So if you do use timers, if you use timers for things, it's worth slapping a timer on a hot plate, because why leave an appliance on for longer than you really need to. Okay.
Good question.
Yeah, please.
Amira La'akum it's only related to things that are needed for Shabbos though, right?
Like what? Give an example. What do you mean?
Meaning like if we were to ask someone to turn on the light, it's because let's say we need to, you know, go to sleep at night and on Shabbos we can't turn on lights. Or like, I'm saying like when we're asking a guy to do something, it's because it's something that we can't do on Shabbos that we need related to Shabbos, I guess, right?
You can ask a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos that you yourself can do. And for whatever reason, it's just more convenient. I'll give you a great example. Duke, pass the kugel, right? I can get my own kugel, so I can ask him to do that as well. But asking a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos that we ourselves can do, that's malacha. That would be Amir La'akam. What is an example? What do you mean? Meaning this distinction that you're making between something that you need on Shabbos versus something you don't need on Shabbos. What would be?
Meaning like, I'm just trying to think Rav Moshe's concern of like how things can spiral out of control and they start doing like, you know, start running businesses on Shabbos. Like I always thought Amir La'akam was related to things that you, let's say, need done, you know, like kind of like related to Shabbos.
Not necessarily. Yeah, there are issues of Amir La'akum. Where does Amir La'akum come up? And having non-Jews perform malacha for you on Shabbos, construction on your house and construction on a house that you're not even living in, gardening and landscaping and dry cleaning. I don't need this for Shabbos, but let's say I need it first thing on Motzei Shabbos. So that's certainly a Amir La'akam. I mean, to let's say drop something off. I don't know how many places really run this way, but let's say I drop something off on Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon, early Friday evening. I have an event on Saturday night. I'm going to need to be here at, you know, 6:30, and I'm going to need to pick this up, make sure that this gets done. That's absolutely a Amir La'akam. And even though the Amir is actually happening before Shabbos in that case, but giving a non-Jew instructions to do something on Shabbos for me, even though I don't need it for Shabbos, is absolutely Amir La'akam.
So besides for the lights, that's the only exception?
Yeah, that's when he, it could be shuls in general.
Like air conditioning, like heating.
I don't know. It's a good question. How do they turn on the air conditioners in Europe? I'm being facetious, but meaning that's what it's predicated on. So therefore that would be, I don't think that would be, you know, that would be okay, at least according to Rav Moshe.
Just lights.
Yeah. Or other similar kinds of things. I'll put it this way, scenarios in which it's difficult to plan for those kinds of things, l'chatchila, right? Because that's why he was talking about lights in a shul. You might even lechatchila ask a non-Jew to come and take care of, because that's tzarchei rabbim and tzarchei mitzvah, and then it would be okay. You have a lot more latitude in those kinds of circumstances. Sometimes you end up in a position where, you know, you might need something like turning lights off is better than turning lights on, at least as far as benefiting from the work that was done. Because you're not really benefiting from an absence, right? Which is what makes that much better. But it doesn't really change in terms of the request that's being made. So Amir La'akam Istalasar needs to be done in, you know, the Derech Remiza and all of that. It's too light in here. Yeah, okay, good luck with that. Weird, telling me that's too light in here. But Amir La'akam will still be Usar. Amir La'akam will still be Usar there.
So same thing with like cleaning help, or if they have like waiters on Shabbos, as long as it's something that
we all that's a little bit different. And again, case by case, I don't want to fall down too deep a rabbit hole here, but case by case, when it comes to, let's say, cleaning help or waiters catering and events and things like that, largely we're never asking a non-Jew to do something that is really usher on Shabbos. We might be paying them in part anyway, for the time that they're giving on Shabbos, But bringing food to a table, or bringing or cleaning food from it, or throwing out trash, or stacking and restacking chairs, or the folding tablecloths, but putting out tablecloths and doing place settings, none of that's really usser. When we're asking for cleaning help or for straightening or whatever, at least it's not by definition usser. It's not by definition usser. If, let's say, the person who's hired chooses to employ malacha because it makes it much less strenuous on them and much easier for them, so be it. They're welcome to do whatever they like. If they would prefer themselves, without being told, if they would prefer to use a sponge as opposed to just washing things by hand, that's their choice. But I'm not asking them to do something that by definition is a malacha. There's no way of turning a light on that's not a malacha. There's no way of turning light off that's not a malacha. There's no way of turning on an air conditioner where it's not a malacha. No way of turning air conditioner off, etc. But there are ways to wash dishes on Shabbos that's not a malacha. And I have the calluses to prove it every 3 day yontif. So if they decide to employ some other means, namely malacha, that's up to them.
So if instead of sweeping a floor, they decide to vacuum, that's also okay.
Might not be, because using a vacuum in of itself and having a vacuum go in your home is problematic on Shabbos for other reasons, because of hashmas kol, because of things that make noise and are thereby considered to be intrusive. That does become your responsibility to make sure, you know, it doesn't happen in your house on Shabbos. But something like gardening or mowing the lawn or whatever, that by definition, they're doing malacha. And with those kinds of things, even if you didn't ask, there are still potential marasayan issues, because it looks like you may well have asked them to dafka come on Saturday, because, you know, nobody's like, it's fine, you know, we'll all be at shul, or we'll all be inside, and, you know, that's a great day to come. Gives that impression, or that you're paying them by the hour potentially. And if you're paying them by the hour, then you're paying them for their, as opposed to the job in its entirety. And then you're paying them for their actual time on Shabbos. That also becomes problematic. There are a lot of different pieces of this. One issue is just the actual Amir La'akum component. One is the question of whether or not you can even benefit from work. The other is even just the appearances that you're benefiting from work, or that it looks like you have a non-Jew in your employ on Shabbos, even without any Amir, even without ever having said anything. That in itself can be problematic. So there's a lot going on there. We'll try to get back to Amir Lakum and make up one of these days. So much to do on the Bishul front. Got a question here on the chat. When we forget to turn on the chalent pot, or forget to unscrew the bulb in the fridge. Forgetting to unscrew the bulb in the fridge would be less of an issue than turning on the chalent pot. If you forget to turn on the chalent pot, there's not much to do, unless you mamish don't have any food. But otherwise, if there are other things to eat, then turning on the chalent pot is far more problematic. You have two issues if you forgot to turn on the chalent pot. Number one is that you're then benefiting from malacha that was done, actual malacha that was done, which is a problem even absent Amir La'akum. If you have somebody in your house, cleaning help, let's make this as simple as possible, they turn on the lights in the basement. So there is no other source of light, and the kids otherwise could not be down there. You could not be down there, whatever. And cleaning woman comes in on job, she's doing whatever it is that she's doing, and then she also turns on the lights in the basement. You can't go down to the basement. You can't benefit from the work that was done. That's apart from it. I never asked her. I never told her. I never suggested anything, but she did it, and she did it for the kids. I can't benefit from that. So that's issue number one of the chalent pot. Issue number two is that in all likelihood, invariably, if you forgot to turn on the chalent pot and then a non-Jew turns on the chalent pot, aside from the fact that that's a Shabbos problem, that's also a kashrus problem. You probably need to throw out your chalent pot, because then you have an Amir La'akum, not an Amir La'akum, sorry, then you have a Bishul La'akum issue, and that non-Jew just cooked for you, unless it was something that was already cooked. You know, there might be circumstances in which it's not, or what if it was on and it cooked, you know, most of the way, and then it kind of turned off and you just want it to be hot again, so that sort of thing. So let's even just isolate the Amir La'akum issue. That would still, yes, be an Amir La'akum issue. Unscrewing the bulb in the fridge would be less problematic as far as benefiting from it afterwards, because turning lights off is always more acceptable than turning lights on, because I'm not benefiting from anything. I can't be said to be benefiting from darkness. Darkness is not a thing. Darkness is an absence of light. There's nothing that's been created, no malacha that's really been created, or no benefit that's been created through the malacha on Shabbos that I'm now benefiting from. You'd still have the same problem, though, in actually posing the question. So the question needs to be done really b'derech remiza. It needs to be done, it's so dark in here, unless there is something that's just so challenging and it really becomes impossible. You benefit by being able to get into your fridge, right? That's a lumdus. That's true. Much like you benefit by being able to, to go to sleep. Meaning, it's not to say that it's not convenient and that there's no benefit, but right, you see the distinction is that there's nothing. The malacha didn't produce something, and I'm now benefiting from that something, as opposed to light. Light has it's produced light, and now I can actually benefit directly from the light. Not that I prefer being able to close my fridge, or I prefer being able to open the fridge, or I prefer being able to sleep. Sleeping on Shabbos is much better than not sleeping on Shabbos. V'hashena mishubachas. We sing about it every week. V'hashena mishubachas. But nevertheless, there's nothing that's been created that I'm then benefiting from. But as far as the actual speech, as far as actually turning to a non-Jew and asking and posing that question, that still becomes problematic. So as a general rule, if it can be done through Derech Remiza, we'll try to share them at some point about Amir al-Akam, but if it can be done through Derech Remiza by hinting and not actually mentioning Malacha and not actually formulating any sort of clear request, then you can have a non-Jew turn off lights, but really not turn on lights. In certain circumstances, you could be a little bit more clear, not necessarily, very direct, but some circumstances you could even be a little bit more clear. Okay, didn't do that much in terms of the actual text, but a lot of discussion, a lot of very, very important halacha lemaisa tonight. I think we got a lot done here, and Amir Tzarshem, we'll pick up with a little bit more about hachzara. We'll talk a little bit more about hot plates and some other contraptions. We'll talk about mixing and stirring, Amir Tzarshem, hopefully next week as well. Any closing questions before we head out? Okay, I think we're good. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful evening. Have a wonderful Shabbos. All the best, everybody. Be well.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You bet. Thanks.